Oh, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Mark Houston. I'm an addict. I've been clean and sober since the morning of October 19th, 1982, because of the power of God in my life. And I was an atheist at that time. Don't you have to appreciate the humor? He says we're a little behind on time. My CD will be available in 3 minutes outside there. Thank you. I know that we have the attention span of gnats, and I think you've all been here since about 7:30, so I do not see this talk lasting very long. What can I say? It's good to be here. You've made me feel welcome. That has not always been the case in my life. And that was because of me, not them. But I don't do much of this anymore, and there's a lot of reasons for that. I do it 6 times a year, and I always pray. I never say yes to any time that I'm asked to share. And I pray about it, and I ask my Creator, am I supposed to go there? And if I'm given guidance, then you will see me, and if I'm not, you won't. And I say no far more than I ever say yes, and it's been very apparent to me why I accepted coming to Toronto in November. Patrick and I are from Texas. It was 81 in Austin this morning. But I'm glad I was here, and I'm glad I've been able to be of some help, I think. And the only thing I have to share with you is my experience. We've all been shaped by our elders. You could call them sponsors or mentors. And a lot of what I share with you is the influences I've had in my life and what the course of action I have taken out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. That is the most that we can do for each other. See? Quit worshiping the fingers. What are the fingers? The book, my sponsor, the group, blah, blah, blah. So you worship God, the fingers point. Worship that which the fingers point to. Build a dependency on God. You and I live in a world of impermanence. You may get moved if you have these dependencies, a sponsor in this group and blah, blah, blah. And you move somewhere, you'll put yourself through extreme suffering. It's all on loan. Understand it's all on loan. Don't let anyone read your book for you. If you're a real addict like me and you're powerless, for me to snort cocaine is to die. The last death I will do in that is the physical death, but everything of any value in my life will die. Every relationship I have will die. My career will die. My friendships will die. My loves will die. Every dream I had will die. Don't let anyone read your book for you. Was given a set of precise, specific, clear-cut instructions. If I take those, I had a revolutionary spiritual experience, and I get to live in the spiritual dimension of 10 and 11 and be of service in the 12th step from the time I get up till the time I go to bed in all my endeavors. You don't have to improve upon that, but don't let anyone read your big book for you. Talking to a couple of people this weekend around the men's issues, giving me the reasons why they hadn't made the amends. I said, can you read? Yes, but my sponsor. And I said, whoa. See, that's a good reason to avoid what the book says, right? I'll talk about amends. My book has 6 or 7 pages of very specific instructions that don't leave any doubt if I'm willing to read. What does help is if you have some men and or women in your life who subscribe to the theory that I'm supposed to make a list of all A-L-L, the harm I have put out into the universe, and do my best to clean that up and to have experience with that. I want to share with you a little bit about where I am in my current experience, my current state of consciousness. I think that that is important. Between my 9th and 10th year, I wound up going to a psychiatric hospital, which I lovingly like to call my nut house experience. And a lot of that came because I was living off laurels. Laurels is the body of work I did last year, or last week for that matter. I don't do that anymore. So I'm going to share with you my current experience and what I'm doing with the circle and the triangle. I have a home group, Carry This Message group. It's an AA group. We're the only AA group that meets in the Cocaine Anonymous Club in Austin. I love it. I'm paying back, you know. When I got sober, there wasn't CA around. So, and I go to that group every Monday, and I'm the treasurer of that group. We open with 3 minutes of meditation. We have a chairperson. He invites someone to bring a topic. We have a timer. You can only share your current experience, and we can only share out of the recovery portion of the big book. Boy, aren't we fundamentalists, right? When the timer goes off, you stop your share right in the middle of the sentence. See? Learned a long time ago, you're talking more in about 3 to 5 minutes in a group, the sound of your own voice is becoming very enchanting to you. It's not to me, but it might be to you. So. We started with a small group 2 years ago. There must have been 45, 50 people there. You have a meeting in which the power of God shows up, you will attract people. And there's power in that room. Those men and women are working with these steps. They've done the work in the first nine. They work with the disciplines. They work with others. And they're bringing power into all of their relationships, into every area of their life. So that's the home group. I go to 3 to 4 meetings a week. Sometimes when I go out of town, I go to more. I sponsor 5, 6, 7 men in the Austin area, and I guess I'm a spiritual guide to probably 5 to 10 other people around the country. I've always been pretty involved. After my little nut house experience, which really caught my attention, I looked at what I had not really immersed myself in, and I had not really emerged myself in working with others. And I begin to do that, and I've done that to this day. In the month of April, I reworked the first 9 steps. I work with the spiritual disciplines of 10 or 11. I'll talk about that. I reworked the first 9 steps because there's a phenomenon that I have experience with that took me into the nut house. It's called reconstruction of the ego, in which you go through this process and you have a valid spiritual experience and you come to know God beyond a shadow of a doubt. It's a knowing. And you know it and you trust it and you feel grounded in it. And then a period of time goes by and you stop working with the disciplines, or you don't finish your amends and you begin to not sponsor so much. And the next thing you know, your ego is completely rebuilt and you're trying to share and live off an old experience. It's like your body trying to live off the food you ate 2 weeks ago. That put me, along with a few other things, in that experience. People said to me, why didn't you drink? Because if God don't want you drinking, you ain't drinking. God don't want you snorting cocaine, you're not snorting cocaine. Don't you get that? It would have been easier in some respects, I think. See, God don't want me snorting cocaine. I had to go through the dark night of the soul experience to become immersed in this program, in these pages of this book, in the disciplines of 10 or 11. All my troubles are my own making. Through a course of action and things I didn't do, I put myself in extreme suffering. God didn't do anything to me. I created that. And I woke up and I got honest about what I wasn't doing. Real honest. So I reworked 1 through 9 the month of April with 3 men. I'm current. To the best of my knowledge, I have no unfinished amends. And that goes back to my earliest memories to now. And I'm talking about the amends that I'm talking about is the new stuff I created over the last 12 months. Not old stuff. I paid all the money back. All that's been done years ago. But the ego begins to rebuild, you fall asleep, You get afraid, you do these things, and you create more harm, and you go back through and you see it. I had 8 amends when I got through my body of work this time. I made those in a week. I'm clear, I'm clean. Came back into 10-11, and that line, be quick to see where religious people are right, and Thomas Merton's book of Daily Meditations came into my life again. I'd done a lot with some of his stuff years ago. Had an effect on me. See, I do what the book says, and then in this particular book I'm working with is when he was in the Hermitage. And here's a man, as far as I can tell, that loved God above all things, and he and I are having the same kind of dialogue. And he's a monk living in a hermitage, and I'm out in this world interacting with you all, and he and I are asking ourselves the same question. What an amazing thing to see this. See? Oh, just don't do drugs and go to meetings. No, no. This. What is available to you and I is an abyss, and there is no end to it. And its depth and weight and breadth and power is beyond your imagination. And if you're not touching that and feeling that, that's your fault. What can happen for us to know God? We're like fish in the ocean, and the ocean is God, to know God at that level. See? This idea of you got to go find God. God's closer than breath. How do you find that which is closer than breath? No, you don't have to find God. You do a series of actions and just wake up to what it has always been present to you. Isn't that great? You don't have to go to India like my pal Joe and study with the Dalai Lama. It can happen right here, right now. It can happen in Austin, Texas, and in Houston, Texas, and Toronto, and there's no place you have to go. You don't need anything between you and that experience, see? That happens through the process of the steps out of that big book. Amazing, incredible stuff. Some of Emmett Fox stuff came back into my life. Find and use your own inner power. I found out where a lot of the phraseologies out of the big book came, by the way. Like a way of life, like thought life, all kinds of things. Powerful, powerful stuff. 11th step uses a word. We never talk about it. Pay attention. It's called your thought life. Never seen those two words together in that combination. The reason we, you and I, better be paying attention to our thought life is it produces our reality. Wow. See, somewhere in here, you stay sober long enough to line the big book that all my troubles are my own making. You must get that. Most empowering line in the whole big book is to realize that all my troubles are my own making, always have been, always will be. That is where the power rests, in knowing that. In knowing that. See, you get your sense of self from the inside, and it comes out, not the outside coming in. Working with Monday through Friday, I get up at 4:30. I spend an hour in prayer meditation. Book says the reason I'm standing before you tonight, I'm not doing cocaine, and I haven't for quite some period of time, is because I am in fit spiritual condition. Period. Doesn't say I'm standing here because I believe in God. Doesn't say I'm standing here because I go to a lot of meetings or I work with a lot of men. It says I'm standing here because I'm in fit spiritual condition, and the book told me exactly how to get there and how to stay there. Not complex, not rocket scientist stuff. Go to the ocean with a thimble, you get a thimble full of water. How much of this you want? How much you want? See? You get to decide. It's an ocean of God out there if you want to go for it. And by the way, those of you that are like me and you are a hog for dope, you better be a hog for God. See? You're out there ripping and roaring. I got to tell you the kind of guy I am, and this is, I had to wake up to this in sobriety when I wanted cocaine. When cocaine called me, because it called me. I didn't have no choice. And I was living in Denver, Colorado. Me and my brother were involved in some entrepreneurial activities associated with cocaine. And it was winter and blizzard. to the point that they were going to shut down the freeways, but we had some stuff we had to do, and we'd been drinking, and we really needed some cocaine. And we grabbed, hopped at our four-wheel, and we're going down that. And I'm talking about a storm in Boulder's 28 miles away. And the guy we're going to lived up at a place called Four Mile Canyon. Hell, on a sunny day, it's treacherous. Didn't stop us. 3 hours later, we come wading up to his door. He said, "My God, you know." We stayed up there and snorted cocaine for three straight days. See, when I want something, when cocaine called me, that's the links I'll go to. I got to do the same thing in recovery, you know. Today, I talk, I do that workshop, and then I spent a bunch of time talking to you, and I came back down and a whole bunch this evening. And I was sitting out there, and I said, "God, I am really tired. If you want these people to hear anything, you better come through me, because I got no juice, baby. I got no juice." And then here I am, and the juice is flowing, and it's moving, see? I got to do the same thing in recovery that I did when I was back there. Because I'm the kind of guy, got broad shoulders and a big ass, and I'm going for it. See? I don't know about the thimble. See, for whatever reason, my experience showed me that I'm either moving toward cocaine and alcohol, or I better be moving toward God, and there's nothing in between. And I don't know why I'm wired that way. I just am. It seems many times that I kind of have my own theory. I've never read this anywhere, but in the process of birth, I think God and St. Peter were probably playing cards and smoking, and I think I just zoomed by, and they probably looked down and said, "Oh, God, we left out a few things with him." Shit, he's going to be an addict. No other way he's going to be comfortable. Hope he lives through that. I'll clean that up when he gets back here again, you know. So I picked up a drink when I was 16 years old. I got introduced to drugs when I got drafted and sent to Vietnam. And I found God in that first drink, and I found God in that first line. You talk to a normal person and you explain to them your experience with cocaine or alcohol like that, and they look at you with glazed eyes. But you know exactly what I meant. Snorted that first line and said, "Oh, my God." You know, nothing got between me and cocaine. See, if you want to know what you worship, look at your actions, look at your behavior. See, and I put alcohol and cocaine ahead of everybody and everything, and that's why the big book, there's a line in Bill's story, is alcohol became my master. Alcohol and cocaine became my master. I know what it's like to be a slave. And I'm not an African-American. But I know what it's like to be in bondage, to serve that master. A lot of reasons why I do the disciplines, by God, and that's one of them. I ain't going back there again, and I got a say in that. I get to set the alarm. I get to get my feet on the floor. I get to work with these disciplines. I get a say in that. I get to participate in that. See? I don't ever want to go back to that place. Ever. From the first time that I drank and the first time I snorted, I had a 20-year history, 20 years with alcohol and 13 years with drugs. One of the things I tell people I love about cocaine, it got me to AA about 10 years ahead of time. Because, boy, it flattened my ass out quick. And yes, you know, I've got some white hair, but some of you are younger. Yes, we had cocaine in the 70s and 80s. We had mounds of that shit, and it was cheap. It was a lot of fun for a while, but if you're an addict and you have the phenomenon of craving coupled with the obsession of the mind and dealing with the spirituality, after a while it doesn't become fun anymore. And then all you're doing is chasing that, and the effect it produces no longer works. And then pretty soon the jobs go, and pretty soon the women go, and pretty soon it all goes. And you're left with yourself and the hideous four horsemen. And the last 5 years I was drinking and using, that's the way that rolled for me. Big book says Mark was a tornado. I got back from Vietnam and finished up college, and I roared off to San Francisco with my first bride. I've been married and divorced four times. I have a lot of experience with going outside myself to bring it into me to feel better. I'll tell you how successful this program works. I haven't found it necessary to get married since October the 21st of 1995. October is a powerful month for me. I turned 63 October 14th. I was 27 years clean and sober on the 19th, and I was 15 years single on the 21st. You have my kind of history, by God, that's a sobriety date you get a token for. What's even funnier about that is people say to me, why would you do that? And I looked at them and I said, that implies you think I was choosing to get married and divorced four times. Where are you getting that idea? Right? What do you think driven by 100 forms of self-selfishness, self-seeking, self-delusion is all about? The belief system that we're sober making choices. If you, I'll give some of you some things to consider. Look at the last 12 months and, quote, look at some of the decisions and choices you've made and how well they turned out, and ask yourself this question. Is it possible I'm not making choices? Is it possible I'm being driven and I don't even know that? That was my experience. Asleep, dreaming I'm awake. My eye thinking because my eyes are open, I'm in the rooms, I'm awake. Not realizing I have all this programming, all these belief systems. Now all you've done is take away vodka and cocaine. Now I'm left with me. See, and that's when the pedal hits the metal, and that's when the work starts. The power of God did separate me. Between my Vietnam experience and a lot of other things that happened in my life, when I was separated from alcohol and cocaine and brought into the rooms, I was an atheist. The greatest miracle of my life was total separation between me and cocaine by the power of God, and I'm sound asleep to it. How in God's name do you help a guy like that? I was 6 or 7 months sober because I was a daily drinker and a daily user. Wasn't a binger, wasn't a sporadic, wasn't any of that. 6 or 7 months. And I haven't even wanted to have done that once. When I say God separated from me, I mean he separated me. Not once had I thought about either, and it occurred to me I did not bring that about. And just perhaps this God that you all talked about in the rooms might have had something to do with that. And I started to wake up. You come in the rooms. Yeah, I new people. You know how it is. We come in and we're terrified, but of course, we act tough and macho. And then they want to make a big deal out of us. Shit, we want to go hide in a corner somewhere. And they're clapping. Oh yeah, God, keep coming back. And you're going, Jesus, leave me alone. And then you stole it. You hold hands and shit. Men are hugging men. We didn't do that in the world we operated out there. You know what I'm saying? Coming into the 12-step fellowship of Cocaine Anonymous, Alcoholics Anonymous is like a Cheech and Chong movie. It's like going through Zen school or something, because nothing makes any sense. Even from the very first meeting you go to, God this, God that, and then stand up, say a prayer, and you hold the hands, and they keep coming back, and you're going, what do they want? And then, the Zen stuff, you're funny if you get a sponsor, you get someone that really works out of the book, and you call them up, and when you're fairly new, it normally has to do with either relationships or money or definitely you. And they, and it's a major problem. And they say, well, Don used to do this. He said, well, have you got your big book? So I learned to either lie to him or have it open. Yes, I have my big book. And, well, have you prayed? So I'd either prayed or I'd lie to him. And of course, in hindsight, see, he's teaching me all the time. He's always taking me into the book. And he'd take me into some instructions. And then he'd say, have a good night. And he'd hang up. We didn't even talk once about what I called him about, see? You see what I mean? Zen stuff, Like they give Zen cones. We've got them in the rooms. Like Zen cones are things like this, like, what'd your face look like before you were born? What? like you call a sponsor, you want to talk about a woman. He says, write inventory. What the hell? There's no connection between those two. You know? It's like, what's the sound of one hand clapping? Have a good night. See, it's a spiritual program. You don't experience God with your mind. That's what it took me so damn long to figure out, you know? Because everything was exactly the opposite of every belief system I had. Recovery early on, it was not difficult from the standpoint of wanting to drink or use. It was just difficult in terms of life. It took me a year and a half to even begin to form sentences and do all the rest of that. I had damaged myself. I still laugh in hindsight. You know, I'll give you an example. When I sobered up, it'd been somewhere between 7 or 9 years. I hadn't even gone into a movie theater. I couldn't even remember the last time I'd gone to a grocery store. You know, you get sober and you're going down the aisle, right? And you're going, your friend would be with me. I go, wow, look at this shit. And he'd go, it's been in the stores for 10 years. Not my store, you know. And I didn't have a car, like I'd be riding the bus and colors. You know, I realized when I don't know what your addiction robbed you of. It robbed me of everything. I couldn't even see colors in it. Springtime, this green would come swooping in. I'd start crying and say, what the hell is the matter? You know, I'm seeing color, for God's sakes. You know, it's like I said, it was Cheech and Chong shit for me consistently, you know. Be sitting there talking. All of a sudden, you start sobbing. Your macho image is blown all to hell. What is this shit? You know, you... you just keep doing the work, you know. We'll keep doing the work, Mark. Keep doing the work. And so, okay. Thank God for Donnie. Sat me down with the big book and introduced me to the title page in the circle and triangle. We went through that process together, where he really broke it down. My first step, 30, you know, you basically, one-third of the recovery portion of the big book is designed to convince me to my innermost self I'm a real alcoholic and that to drink is to die. See, that's why one-third. That becomes the foundation. That becomes the launching pad for all the rest of the work that I did then and what I do to this day. It is my first step experience. Number one question I work with today in my life is, do I want to live? Because for me to snort cocaine is to die, so do I want to live? And the way I was taught to live was immersed in the program of the disciplines of 10, 11, and 12. And those two must stay number one in my life. If I do that, then I have conscious contact. I have a relationship with God, with myself, with you. And I can take that out into the world. But it was grounded in that long, arduous process of being convinced to my innermost self, I'm a real addict. That once I snort a line of cocaine or take a drink of vodka, I've lost power, choice, control over how much. And I look at instant after instant after instant of the manifestation of that. And I saw that was going on from the time I took my first drink when I was 17 years old. 20 years with alcohol and 13 with drugs, and I go back and I look and I remember. Remember being in Alaska and my grandmother died and I got 6 days to get to Iowa to her funeral and I pick up a drink. And 6 days later, I wake up in a hotel in St. Louis, Missouri, and I miss the funeral. And I don't know why, and the guilt and the shame and the remorse. And I did things like that hundreds of times and I never knew why. Because if you're like me, at some point in time, you start asking yourself, what am I, a psychopath or a sociopath? What is wrong with me? And that simple answer of I take a drink or snort a line and break out in a phenomenon of craving answered all of those questions and removed so much of that shame, guilt, and remorse from me. Then the part that was scary, once I got it, pages 23 to 43, and I'm going to paraphrase this. I commit the most insane act of my life on my power, stone cold sober, and that is that I get a little uncomfortable, or I get to feeling a little too good, and my mind says that a line of cocaine will make it even better, and I act on that. Based on all of this history and all this experience, at certain times. at certain times. You think that's why they tell me to do the disciplines on a daily basis? Because, see, I don't know what the time is, and I don't know what the day is, and I don't know what the hour is, and I'm not going to gamble with my life. And you see the god-awful truth that once more Mark has no effective mental defense against the first line of cocaine or the first drink of vodka on his power. There isn't anything about that that feels good. I always considered myself a somewhat intelligent man with willpower. I was raised that way, Vietnam, a lot of other things, but I couldn't beat this thing, and I saw it. And that's what convinced me to my innermost self that this is me. I had to get convinced. So you stay around long enough, you don't see a lot of long-term sobriety anymore. Why do you think that is? My experience is we lose our connection with the first step. This program is more meaty and juicy and alive for me than it was my first year. And I'm in my 28th year. You know what is incredibly exciting to me? I don't have a clue what the 28th year looks like because I haven't experienced it yet. But goddamn, I'm excited. I love being thrust into the unknown because I got God in my life, at the center of my life and in my being. So bring it on. All of it. Bring me the pain. Bring me the joy. Bring me the suffering. Bring me the freedom. Bring it all on. It is all meaty and tasty and juicy. And all is well, grounded and centered in God and in these disciplines. That's what this program is about. Ooh, just don't do drugs and go to meetings. You see? The meeting should be a manifestation of what I'm talking to you about, of this power working in my life. That's what we ought to be talking about in the meetings. That's the hope to give to new people, new men and new women coming in, doing and living their lives the way we were. They need to see that in us. They need to see us sounding like we're somewhat sane, looking clean, fresh, like we love our lives. It's okay they see us driving new cars with valid driver's licenses. Because when they first come in, they ain't too interested in God, I can assure you. We were talking the other day about God, it's the simple things, you know. I rented a house this year, and I've always wanted a big walk-in closet. Well, by God, I got one. I thought I had a lot of clothes. Shit, the thing looks empty. It's that big. It's bigger than apartments I've had. And I love it. And I go in there, and one of my biggest problems I had when I was coming up to visit you is I didn't know which pairs of shoes to bring. God, that's a tough problem. See, when I got clean and sober, I had one pair. And they didn't look good. God, I love being sober. Well, which sport coat do I want to? I get anxiety. Which one do I bring? God, I love that problem. See, I love being sober. Which bank account do I want to take cash out of? See? I don't care what in the hell you get fired up about. Get fired up about that. We were talking the other day. I believe in setting goals and dream boards and a lot of that other stuff and paying attention to my thought life. And on my dream board has been for a while that I was going to buy an Armani suit. Well, by God, I went and tried one on the other day. See, now here's the difference. I'm an Iowa farm boy, right? And I'm going to buy that Armani suit, and I got to tell you, I look great. And it felt great, but you know the difference? I'll own the damn suit, and the suit won't own me. And I'll wear it because I want to wear it and no other reason. God, I love being sober. Right. I get to go to work Monday through Friday. It's a wonderful thing. I get to go to work. I get to be accountable and responsible. I get to pay taxes. What incredible gifts this stuff is, see? all came from what? The work of 1 through 9. Those first 9 steps launch you into that fourth dimension, which is the theme of this weekend. The spiritual dimension of 10 and 11. Go through life with an awakened spirit. Having the kind of fun that I'm talking about. The kind of power in your life. To be what? To be a better husband, a better friend, a better wife, a better daughter, a better son, a better employee. To treat people with kindness and compassion. To acknowledge your imperfections. To know that you will fall short. Word sin means miss the mark. Now, the reason I rework the steps every year, I love God as much as any person I know, and I fall short, and that's okay. If I do, so do you, and that puts us on equal footing. See, in this journey together, I don't have to be separated from anymore. I'm a part of a much greater whole, and God is grounded in the middle of it all. That second step, we agnostics, is one of the most brilliant pieces of literature I have ever read in my life. The whole thing is about the God issue. And you can take everything from a believer to an atheist and come through the other side of that and have an experience in the second step with God. The movement from a belief in God to an experience of God is like going from one side of the planet to the other. That's what happens to us in this program. You move from belief to an experience. You know God. We're grounded. We're grounded in that. You know what a gift that is? So I've worked with so many believers who are suffering because they don't know God. They believe in God but don't know God. There's a massive difference in that. I've taken priests through the work, had them cry like babies because they came to know God and moved from here to here because you don't experience God with your mind. You experience that which is already a part of God, your awakened spirit, 4 through 9. Face and be rid of that which has me blocked from what? From my awakened spirit, which is already a part of God. My oneness with that which created me and created you. If I harm you, I harm me, and you start to get that on an interior cellular level. So what does that do? That changes how you interact with people. You become kinder and more loving and more tolerant. You look people in the eye, the maid today, talking with her, tipping her. How are you? How is your day? You notice everything and everybody, and you begin to see instead of just look. Third step decision. Offer myself to thee, build with me, and you do with me as you will. Why? I've told you why. The very best I have is I come into the rooms with brain damage, kidney damage, liver damage, and everything I own fit in a duffel bag. That's the best I do on my power with my keen mind. And I suspect the same is true looking at most of you. So I made that decision, and then I write the inventories. Resentment inventory. Fear inventory. Sex inventory. Fifth step. I do multiple fifth steps. If you haven't tried that, I'll challenge you to try it. By the way, it's in the big book. It says, read your inventory to person or persons. Take a body of work and read it to 3 different people. Watch what happens. Powerful, powerful experience. 6 and 7. I'll mention this. There's a tool I use. I just look for tools to help me with the experience. I use the sacraments of penance for my 6th step. It's a Catholic tool. It's a fabulous tool to identify the exact nature of your defects. Take that to God in the 7th step and get down on my knees and pray, and I never look back 1 minute, and I don't worry about whether it got removed or not. I still don't know what the hell people mean when they say I'm working on my defects. I think of like myself sharpening the knife of selfishness or something. I'm not quite sure, but the whole thing is it needs to go away. Sidebar on that. Selfishness is the firing mechanism for the 7 deadly sins. Selfishness is gone. All defects, those big 7, lie within us at any given time. If selfishness is gone, they are never ignited. Make a list of all the persons. Every time I get to the eighth step, in addition to what I've seen in my inventory, I ask God to show me any other harm of any kind that I put out into the universe, and that includes up to Mother Earth, everything. And you sit with that, and you go and make those amends. I had to go to seven states to clean all my wreckage up. From the first time I came in the program, it took me 17 and a half years to make all of my amends that were in my consciousness. 17 and a half years. You want to have an experience? Wake up one morning when, as far as you know, there's absolutely no harm that you have not cleaned up. See what happens. I went to grave sites all over. 14 years. Most intimate relationship I've ever had is with the Internal Revenue Service. I had a 14-year relationship with him. Every quarter, I'd go down and talk to him. We were tight. Their needs were pretty simple. They wanted their money. And they let me know that the money that was coming to me was their money and not my money. They had floated me for a while, and they weren't going to float me no more. And I'm still grieving over the loss of that, I think. But then as you make those amends, you see your life start to take off, and you pay money back, and more money comes in. You start to see that everything is connected. If I'm dishonest in one area of my life, it filters off into every area, and you start to see that. And you clean that up with your family and the ones who are close to you. Doesn't mean you're going to have wonderful relationships with them. It's not what the process is all about. Eighth step, those amends. God, make them. Clean your stuff up. Start with the ones closest to you. Clean it up. Why? Because you don't know when your time to leave your body will show up. That's why. Do it. Get free. Watch how the disciplines of 10-11 come alive as you move through the amends process. Book's got a lot of great instructions in there. You can spend the rest of your life working with the disciplines of the 10th and 11th step. Develop a daily meditation life. People have asked me, Mark, of all the stuff you've done over the years, is there anything that you would put number one in the way of spiritual practices? And I would tell you it would be meditation. It was in meditation I lost my identification with my mind. It was in meditation that I awakened to the fact that there was a spirit housed in this body. And that's what the big book meant in the 10th step when it said, Mark's entered the world of the spirit. And I was to live and move and have my being there and operate in this body and interact with you with that awakened spirit in all that I do. Because I live in a world, as I said, that is big and that scares me to this day. And I must get grounded with that awakened spirit to move through the day. Hell, failure never scared me. Success did. Rejection didn't scare me. Acceptance did. You see what I'm saying? I can't do any of this if I'm not grounded with that awakened spirit in my life. I was talking earlier that we have a phrase I work with. Some of you are familiar with this, called suicide by cop. You're sober and your life's taken off and you burn the bridges. Suicide by cop. Start paying attention to that. Why? I don't deserve. Yes, you do. Start waking up to that. You're not afraid of failure. You're afraid of success. You're afraid of the light shining. You're afraid of God having to use you. See, there's a line in fear inventory we need to talk about more. It says, we let God demonstrate through us what God can do. Wake up to that. See, I come up here to speak. You afraid? No, not in the least. Why? Because God will demonstrate through me what God can do. God knows what you need. I don't know what you need. That's a real experience, ladies and gentlemen. Don't miss out on it. Use it all the time. God, guide me, move me here, in terms of your career, relationships, everything. Start working with the tools of the 10 step. Watch, ask, cease, pause. Sixth sense, wake up. Work with meditation. Whole chapter devoted to the 12th step where you take your awakened spirit out to be a service to God and your fellow human beings in every area of your life. Experience dimensions of love and joy and wonder that you never knew existed. Pull over to the side of the road weeping like a baby because you feel that love. See? God, it's there for all of you. Don't take a thimble to the ocean. take a much bigger container. It's contained in the book. It's contained in the steps. I do a lot of things along with, but never instead of. My ass is parked in my home group on Monday nights. And I go back Sunday about 5 o'clock. I'm going to be listening to a pitiful fifth step from a sponsee of mine. Not because I want to. It's one of the things that you do to stay in fit spiritual condition. Give, give, give. I never worry about what comes to me. I worry about what I give, and it's more that Zen shit. That when I stop worrying about what came to me and what I give to you, I got more coming to me. I know what the hell to do with. For years, I heard things like this. Seek ye first the kingdom, I will add the rest unto you. I know exactly what that means today. It means seek ye first the kingdom, and I will add the rest unto you. What a deal. It's been added unto me in spades beyond my wildest dreams. How do you take a guy that had brain damage, kidney damage, liver damage, everything he owns in a duffel bag? In 27 plus years, I stand up here in Toronto, Canada, with a passport, for God's sakes, that's valid. I get to travel all over the world free, talking about God in the steps. How does that happen? If that happens for me, it can happen for you. See? Submit to this process. Submit to a way other than your own. And then take that, damn it, take it into these rooms. We're all here because there's all kinds of them out there dying of cocaine addiction, of alcoholism. They're dying of suffering. They feel separated from everybody and everything. And we have been given the power to recover and to let them know they don't have to live that way anymore. All the work I ever did, I realize, is for you. It's not for me. You finally start to realize that. And this thing lives through you. You begin to love like you could never love before. Love has no opposite. See, you can add to my life, but you cannot take from my life because you have nothing I need. I'm here to give you love, period. And I never worry about whether anything comes my way. Isn't that funny? You add to me, you do not take from me. You cannot injure me. What an incredible deal. And it all came because I drank a little bit too much vodka, snorted a little bit too much cocaine. I got to live two lives. Zorba the Buddha. You get to live two lives, Zorba the Buddha. See? What a deal we got. What a ride we got. Don't miss out on it. God bless you. I love you.